So we're going to, we'll start with that question. Why does Hashem want us shaking a bunch of leaves? So the question really breaks down to a few questions. The first question is there a reason for the mitzvot in the Torah? And can we understand that reason? The second question is, are mitzvot finite? How can the same mitzvah that was relevant 3,000-4,000 years ago still be relevant today? So I think that's how I would break down the question into two. We can add other, you guys want to break it down to more angles? We're going to touch on other ideas. I don't know if we have to define them as part of the question, but if you have other questions, tell me.
It revolves around Hashem's involvement in our lives. The idea of Hashem caring what we're doing.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I.
I have another question also.
Yeah.
What's the purpose of sitting in Sukkot beside to remember that Am Yisrael used to live in the desert? Is there maybe more like being together with family, understanding that you don't need as much as you think?
That's another question. We'll get to there. Stay there. Let's start with part one and part two. That'll take us long enough, and then we'll get to part three. Okay, so part one. The reason behind mitzvot. So, I wanted to get to this as part of our parsha class. In our parsha, there's an interesting pasuk. It says like this. Torah tziva lanu Moshe. You guys heard of that pasuk, right? Torah tziva lanu Moshe, morasha, kilat Yaakov. Moshe Rabbeinu taught us Torah. And the Gemara in Tractate Makot, and Masecht Makot, the Gemara tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu taught us 611 mitzvot. Yes? Two we heard from Hashem. So the pasuk before Torah tziva lanu Moshe, people generally forget. And the pasuk beforehand says like this. Av chovev amin. Hashem loves nations. Kol kedoshav biyadecha, but he holds tightly onto the holy people of Israel. Vehem tukul raglecha, and they are willing to accept whatever beatings they have to, just because they're connected to you. The regel could mean to the foot of or to the cause of. Yisa midabrotecha. They take it all because of your dibrot, your two dibrot. And so, some of the Tosfos explain this pasuk to mean that we heard the first two commandments from Hashem, that's a Gemara, in many places in Shas, Brachos, Makos, Megillah, Sota, many places the Gemara says, we heard the first two commandments from Hashem. And why did we have to hear those two commandments from Hashem? So everyone's familiar with Maimonides, the Rambam's opinion, that this is the basis for the whole Torah. And we at Machon Meir this year studied the Drashot Aran, who gave us a totally different understanding in those two commandments. And the Ran began by saying that human logic would dictate that we would deny the truth of the Torah. He said our own logic would say Hashem needs nothing. Hashem is perfect. The idea that Hashem spoke to man and commanded him something is something that human logic is adverse to. You think about it and you say, why? Why was Hashem missing anything? You want to tell me Hashem wanted people to rule over. You want to tell me Hashem wanted people to call him king. You want to tell me Hashem wanted to do good to humanity. Those are all interesting concepts. But I come back to square one and say Hashem's perfect. He doesn't need anything. So why would Hashem create the world? And so the Ran argues with the Rambam's interpretation of these two mitzvot. The Ran says we had to hear those first two commandments from Hashem because they are the two commandments that define human logic. If Hashem tells us directly and says, hey, I took you out of Mitzrayim, in other words, I am connected to planet Earth, even though that you don't understand why or how that could work, but I'm telling you I am. So you don't understand how it works. And that's why you had to hear it from Hashem. The Ran says that's why those two commandments had to be said by Hashem. Because those are the two commandments that are at the basis of all of the Torah, the idea that Hashem cares. Why does Hashem care? He's perfect. I affect him. Hashem gives me mitzvot. Why would he give me mitzvot? He needs me. Says the Ran, that's why Hashem had to personally show up and say, hey, I took you out of Mitzrayim. You see I'm involved? I'm commanding you. Lo yelecha. And I'm telling you, I care. You cannot take on other gods. So those two commandments are the basis of the whole Torah. The Ran takes a different approach than Rambam. Rambam says you should have figured that out on your own. That Hashem is singular. So the Ran says, yeah, Hashem is singular. But that He connects to me, that He cares what I do, that He gives mitzvot, that's something you can't wrap your head around. And that's why you needed it to come directly from Hashem. It had to be a prophetic vision. And using that Ran, we can understand the Tosfos better. When Tosfos says, Yisami daberotecha, means they take on themselves the whole Torah because of the two commandments, when we understand that those two are the basis philosophically. Once Hashem gave us a commandment that says, I took you out of Egypt, in other words, I'm involved, I'm your God, on a personal level, as Rav Hirsch says, that's the key message of Adon Olam. We describe Hashem's greatness all over the universe. Then we say, Vehu Eili, Hashem has a personal relationship with me. That concept, says the Ran, that's the first of the two commandments. The second is, I care what you do now. Lo yelecha, I care. It's not only I was involved and I'm giving you commandments, I care if you obey or not. So now we have to be mature enough to understand that there's a reality, even if I don't always understand the reason behind it. You know, my kids will sometimes say, I want to pour myself a hot drink. And I'll say no. And they'll say, why? And I'll say, sometimes I'll say, because I don't want you to burn yourself. And they'll say, I'm not going to burn myself, right? If you haven't yet met a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old, you will. And they're going to tell you they won't burn themselves. Okay. And you as a parent sometimes have to say, okay, so you say you're not going to burn yourself and you're still not going to pour yourself a hot drink. But why not? Now what are you going to answer? Your answer, they're not hearing. Because I said so. Okay. So sometimes the answer, because I said so, is another way of saying, so you don't yet understand. Fine. Maybe one day you will. Maybe one day you won't. But you're still going to have to do it. So when we approach the Torah, we have Shalom Ronen, our Madrich, Baruch Haba, Yeshikach for setting all of this up. When we approach the mitzvot, our first level of understanding involves this understanding. I don't always have the ability to understand the reasoning behind mitzvot, even though we will discuss reasons for the mitzvot, but that's not the basic level. The first level is, there is a concept that Hashem said, I gave you commandments. And as hard as it is to understand why Hashem would, that doesn't change the fact that He did. We're no different than the 2-year-old in our own realm who says, why can't I pour myself a hot drink? So that's step one. Now, I want to develop step one a drop more. I just had to make sure that wasn't my 2-year-old. I want to develop step one a little bit further. The Baal HaTanya. We've heard of the Baal HaTanya. Rav Shneur Zalman, the Rebbe of Chabad, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch HaRav and the Baal HaTanya. So in the Tanya, he develops a concept which is not his own, but it's a very important concept. He says, maybe we should introduce the concept first. Okay, we're going to take a step back and introduce the concept before we go to the concept that the Baal HaTanya says, okay? A 150 years ago, if a woman would walk out on the street with a blue dress, she could get fined because it was immodest. Why is she wearing such a bright color? So in many countries, it was normal. She could get fined. 150 years ago, if a woman had an argument against her husband, so it was very simple. She was wrong. There was nothing else to talk about. She couldn't take him to court. She had no voice. I'm saying, even in the United States, in England, not so long ago. Not so long ago. There weren't equal rights for people who were non-citizens. It's almost like Sodom. The idea that if you're in a car accident and the other person is not a citizen, till today to some degree, even though that might not be official policy, but in the Palestinian Authority, if you have the unfortunate experience of having an accident with a car from the Palestinian Authority, you have a problem. they're not going to collect for you, because you're not a member of their state. I don't know if they collect for members of their state either, that I don't know. But we have cars driving here who are from the Palestinian Authority, and if there's an accident and they're completely at fault and you have witnesses and everything, you still are 90%, you won't get a penny. So what I'm trying to illustrate is that society has accepted different concepts as being ethical and fair and right and moral, and it keeps changing. Meaning if we would look at the ethics, let's take Shalom Moshe.
Shalom Aleichem.
Everyone's sitting here salivating for your children.
Ah, we've got two pots of it cooking in the kitchen.
Okay, so tomorrow?
I'm going to need help bringing it over though.
For sure, okay. You're so hungry? Okay.
Let's keep it
at my home.
Yeah, okay. I envisioned like 9:30. We'd stop, okay. And those who have to go to Maariv would go to Maariv. Those who, and then, yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm not going to be coffee for saying this. Why not just go to 10 o'clock?
I davened already. Who over here didn't daven Maariv yet? We don't have a minion yet. How many people, let's see a show of hands again. How many people did not yet daven Maariv? Okay. So, no, I think we'll, let's see where we're holding. 9:30 or 10, and we'll, and then at that time we'll go pick up the chon.
All right.
Okay?
Sounds good.
Don't forget, 9:30 means we stop at 9:20, 9:15. Okay. No. He davened already, right?
Yeah.
He davened, yeah. Okay. If we look at society, there are many things in society that have shifted over the years. 100 years ago, in almost all over the world, including the United States, a woman couldn't own land. A woman couldn't go to court. A woman wasn't believed in court. We won't talk about children's rights. Are there children here? Yes. It's a frightening thing. What was considered legal and normal only 25 years ago in Europe with regards to children. I won't say in front of children. But suffice it to say that things that today people would go to prison for life were completely legal vis-a-vis children 25, 30 years ago. And I know because I heard it from our students who experienced that. What I'm trying to show is that there is no time in world history that you could point to and say, boy, has society been consistent in that value. I don't think there's a single value, including murder, that you can say that society has been consistent on. You know that in Italy, for until not so long ago, if someone killed out of anger, it was considered a lesser offense because he got upset, he lost his temper. I'm saying there are all kinds of things which, if you study, what? Okay, so the law took that into account. You know that in Arab countries till today, there are revenge killings, honor killings, and they're legal. We had a student who, a kid walked in front of his car, and he ran him over. He was driving on a highway, and the kid walked in front of his car, and the kid got killed. And by Arab law, the family was allowed to kill the guy, even though he did nothing wrong. This was the law in Jordan. Civilized Jordan, yeah? In Jordan, he knew that the second he gets out of jail, the family will kill him. And the even though he did nothing wrong, the kid walked in front of his car. So that's law today in Jordan. You're allowed to kill someone even though the person who got killed, it was their fault. Doesn't matter. It's an honor killing. That's okay. Law. So I'm saying there's no value. I don't think you can take a single value and point to it and say that universally the world has been consistent in accepting that as a cherished value. The Baal HaTanya writes, the greatness of the Torah is its tested truth in that the Torah has been consistent for 4,000 years. We have retained the same value system. You can tweak things, right? So today I get a kosh kolach that was mass-produced, and I wear a yarmulke that was mass-produced in China, but my values haven't shifted. Meaning that when you look at when we got married, so my parents came from the United States. They were sure that my father and mother would walk me down the aisle. They show up to walk me down the aisle, and Rav Avram Shapiro, the chief rabbi of Israel, Rashiv Mirko's Rav, who married us off, So he says, no, the two fathers walk him down and the two mothers walk down the girls. So our rabbi happened to have been in Israel at that time, our local community rabbi, and he said, our custom is that the father and the mother take him down. And Rav Avram looked at Rabbi Moshe David Tendler, he should live and be well, and said, the Jerusalem custom is the two fathers, and that's what's going to be. And just walked away. So that's what's going to happen. I'm not talking about it. This is what's happening here. And Rabbi Tendler then said to my father, he said, I can't fight with him. You know, that's the custom. So the next night, the first night of Sheva Brachos, so when my father got up to speak, he said it was a shocking experience to see a complete stranger taking his son to such a meaningful moment. This is his kids getting married finally, right? And here's this guy who I don't know, my father-in-law, and he's going to walk me down. And then my father thought about it and said, right, I don't know him, but his house is the same as my house. The fact that he brought up a house in Jerusalem and my father brought up a house in New York, it doesn't matter. Look at Yossi. Yossi moves in here and he's a part of the community. You're here 2 months, 3 months? Anything new? Yeah, there are a few new things. He sees people in sandals. Nothing major. Meaning that it's the same Torah all over the world. It's the same Torah for the last three millennium. Meaning our consistency and our value system. No one in the world gave the respect and the value to a woman the way the Jewish people did. The idea that a woman can take her husband to court, this has been the case for over 3,000 years in Israel. Az tavona shtaim nashim zanot el ha-melech. Shlomo Melech, it says in Sefer Melachim, had the lowest of the lowest women show up to his court. They had no problem accessing the highest court if they had a case, right? How come? Because that's the Jewish value. Wait, Mr. Turin, you have a seat. There are plenty of chairs. There are more downstairs, there are more up here. This idea, I'm giving one example of a value. We could take many values. We could take basically any value. And the Torah, says the Baal HaTanya, the Torah's greatness is tested in its consistency. The idea that the values of the Torah stay strong, and it doesn't matter whether it's popular or not popular. We were very unpopular for most of our history for doing circumcisions. No one said, good for the Jews. Now the world realizes it's very healthy. That's very nice. The Greeks punished it by death. The Romans punished it by death. We had to deal with a world that did not share our value system. So a person could say, aren't you being primitive? And people do tell me that. I once was approaching Mahon Meir, and I saw a student walking out, and he was really upset. I said, what happened? He said, I just saw the most barbaric thing in my life. I said, what happened? He says, the whole Beis Medrash is standing there. They take this baby, they slice off a piece of skin, and everyone goes, Mazel Tov! And they're all so happy. And the baby's bleeding. He ran out. He said, he had never seen a bris before. So he said, how could they all be celebrating? Look at what the baby's going through. Okay, so today, modern medicine agrees that the Jewish way of doing it is the most painless. The Jewish way of doing it is the healthiest. But we didn't have that. We didn't have modern medicine on our side. All of our history. It's a new thing that state after state in the United States today is passing laws that that's the way to do bris mila. There's actually laws going out across different state lines because they realize that our way of doing it, the baby suffers under 2 seconds. Half a second, second, second and a half, under 2 seconds. And the way that the doctors do it, the baby's in intense pain for minutes. Minutes. I mean, you can't even compare. So that's, again, a small example. But the idea, coming back to what the Baal HaTanya is saying, is that there's consistency. That the value system that the Torah gives us and the mitzvot of the Torah are consistent. So that's in terms of part one. I want to recap what we discussed. Mm-hmm. We began with the Ran and his disagreement with the Rambam in his definition of the first two mitzvot. The idea that it's correct that the human mind challenges the concept that Hashem would give us mitzvot, and that's why we had to hear the first two commandments from Hashem. Once we understand that, we moved on to the second concept, which we elaborated on from different angles, the idea that the values and the mitzvot of the Torah are consistent, that there's a consistency, and that reflects godliness. The idea that we don't have to shift whether the world finds it popular or not popular, this is what we do. And I'll give one more example. I don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings, but let's just take, again, an example. 150 years ago, I used to collect back in the United States, they used to have garage sales. Okay, not 150 years ago, I'm pausing, coming back. They used to have garage sales in the United States, and I used to go to these garage sales, and for a dollar or two, you could get all kinds of stuff. So I got amazing paintings, and they're adorning my parents' house. And I got very interesting books and Sfarim. You'd sometimes buy a whole box of Sfarim for $5. So I once bought a box of Sfarim, and in there I found the Siddur. And I started leafing through the Siddur, and I see it's missing a few things. There's no V'lirushalayim Ircha, there's no V'techazeneinim V'shuv Chalitzion. So I'm trying to understand this Siddur, and I see in the front it's Reverend something. So I did some research, and they told me, yeah, this is a Reform Siddur from 100 and something years ago. They took out V'lirushalayim Ircha, they took out V'techazeneinim V'shuv Chalitzion Brachamim. I couldn't decide whether I should keep it in my library. I had it until a few years ago, and then I decided it's not a good idea. People are going to say, look what Rosh Frankenthal has in the back of his closet, right? So I got rid of it. It was very interesting for me, but I someone once came and started benching from that. So I said, okay, it's no longer like just an artifact. Right? Bnei Yerushalayim, right? He comes to me after and says, missing a page. Right. So I decided it's you shouldn't al tashkin ba'alecha avla. It says in Eov, and Chazal said that's about a safer. That's inaccurate. You shouldn't leave it home. What? We're having Q&A later. We'll get to that. Coming back to here. So again, it's very tempting to say Yerushalayim is old-fashioned. Who's striving for Yerushalayim? There was a time that the majority said that. When Rav Hirsch came to Germany, he was not the Rov. He was the Miut. Meaning most of Germany went with the Reform movement. Rav Hirsch had to try and put together a community of people who would stay faithful to tradition because the argument seemed very compelling. But again, the basic argument begins with the Ran, and then we move on to the Baal HaTanya, the idea that the Torah and its values and its mitzvot are consistent. That's godliness. Now we move on to another question. Wait, so why was it important for Hashem that we should do this? That's another question we'll get to in a second. But the first concept is an eternal concept. It's a concept that covers every mitzvah. It's a concept that covers every value of the Torah. The Torah's greatness is in its consistency. And the fact that those values are as true today as they were back then. And it's a double-edged sword. It means sometimes people have more rights than the modern or ancient world would give them. And sometimes people have other rights than the Torah than the modern world gives them. It cuts both ways. It really goes in both directions, but its greatness is because it's true and it's consistent. The truth is we can really elaborate on this more, but I think for now we're going to pause on this and move on to the second part of it. The truth is that we have classes online on this subject. It deserves greater elaboration. For one night, we have other things to cover, so we're going to leave it with that, and we'll move on to the second question of, okay, can we understand reasons in the mitzvot? So we understood that Hashem gives us mitzvot, and we understood that the mitzvot are consistent. Can we also understand there's room over there? If we can just let David move in. Are there reasons for the mitzvot, and can we understand them? So those are two different questions. Are there reasons for the mitzvot, and can we understand them? Those are really two different questions. We'll begin with point number one. Are there reasons for mitzvot? For sure. It's the beginning of the night. Can I go deep quickly? You guys ready to focus?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to veer off a little bit for 1 second. David, there's hot water here if you want to drink. All the new guys who came in, maybe you want a hot drink. There's hot water, there's coffee, there's tea. There's no milk because there's going to be fleishig chon soon. But there's coffee whitener. And there's cakes. You're welcome to make a bracha. Okay. Are there reasons for mitzvot, and can we understand them? Okay. 100 years ago. I'm going to sidetrack for a second, because it's connected to this. We might as well get a broader picture. And then we'll come back to the point at hand, okay? 100 years ago, a question came up. I just want to mention, there were years where we were surprised, like 5 or 10 women showed up, and that's why we set up this mechitza, so that they could come in unobstructed. You guys sitting at the entrance, if you see someone coming in, let them just pass through. Say there. I never know. Like some years many women show up, some years not so many women show up. So 100 years ago, a question came up. There was a group that were in an accident. They were stuck on a hilltop, and there was snow. They couldn't get out of the hilltop. And they had dead animals, and they had dead humans with them. Dead. Now, some of them were Jewish. And the question came up, a Jew that's faced with the question, should I eat a dead human or a dead animal? They're both not kosher. Which should I eat first? Right? What? So, our natural inclination is to say, eat the animal, don't eat the human. I'm not going into what the right answer is. This was discussed by all the leading rabbis of the time. This brought all of Europe into an uproar. This was during the time that rabbis were compiling encyclopedias. There was the rabbi, the Sephardi rabbi who wrote the Steichemed. There was the rabbi who wrote the Pachad Yitzchak. There were many encyclopedias being compiled then, and this was a burning topic back then, which the Steichemed, the Pachad Yitzchak, and the leading rabbis of the time, there were, I'd say, maybe four or five burning topics of that generation. One of them was spontaneous generation. What do we do with the opinions that say it exists, that things can just create out of nothing? What do we do with lice today? That the Talmud says you're allowed to kill lice because they don't have children, right? But we know they do have children. So can you kill lice today? How do we deal with science and halacha? So all of these questions are great if you guys want to bring them up later. But I just want to throw us into how difficult the question can be of dealing with the values of the Torah, because you do have machlokas Rambam Tosvos. What is the prohibition to eat a dead human? Is it biblical or not? Okay, so you can understand there's room for discussion here, which is anathema to the average person. You tell yourself, I can't think about eating another human. Okay, now let's come back to the point at hand. So is there a reason for the mitzvot? For sure. Can we wrap our heads around the reason? Pause. Let's take another step back. What bothers us about the question about eating a human or an animal? Because there's something very human that it finds it revolting to eat another human being. We would throw up probably if we would do that. And that's the natural reaction. It's a normal natural reaction we have. Now I want to put that question on the side burner for 1 minute and deal with another question, okay? And this will lead us. I told you, it's the beginning of the night. We're going to go deep. You guys, you all approved. I saw nodding heads, okay? So we're going to move on to another question. Torah says, don't take the mother bird with the baby bird, right? It says, shalach teshalach teim et abanim tikach lach. Send away the mother bird, then you can take away the babies. Why? Oh, it's obvious. We don't want the mother bird to suffer, right? But then the Mishnah says that if you say, Rabon Shom, you gave the mitzvah because of your mercy, that's called wrong. That's an inappropriate way to pray. Why? Wait, what's wrong? It's not mercy? Aren't the mitzvot of the Torah supposed to teach me values and supposed to teach me how to be a merciful person? What's wrong with saying that? So now we'll come back to the question of eating a human being. The question really starts with, can I have a value system that I say, Rabon Shalom, you have to measure up to my value system? And if you don't, then leave me alone. Or do I say, I really can't have a value system because I can't really know what's right and wrong. You see, society's gone in many directions over the years, and the human conscience has allowed people to sink women in the Salem witch trial, right? You know the Salem witch trial. They said women were witches. So they put them in the water, and if they drowned, so they were innocent, that was okay. But if they came up, that was proof they were witches because they were able to come up, so then they killed them. Okay, so that was it's a very good trial. Say that's, you know,
Be dead anyway.
What?
But
there would be no witches in society. You have to understand. They had to make sure there'd be no witches. That was the point. You have to deal with the betterment of society. And don't forget eugenics. I mean, Hitler had a point. If our point is human logic, if we're going to say that human logic is what defines values, so then the advancement of the world is is best realized by getting rid of all those people who slow the world down. Why should society set up social services and deal with the handicapped? Just kill them. They take society's assets, right? So if it's about logic, so then I always tell people, I had a guy who used to come with me all the way to Kochav Yaakov and back, arguing Jewish philosophy. And I once said to him, when your relative dies, you should make a barbecue and eat him. Because if your goal is human logic, so it's such a waste to just bury him. Why don't you eat him? If it's all up to logic, so then we come back to the question that really bothers us. But it does bother me to eat a human being. And it does make sense that I be a merciful person and don't take the mother and the baby together. And yet the Mishnah says, you can't point to a mitzvah and say, I know why Hashem did that. What's the philosophical problem with that? And this is where we have to cut like a knife. We have to be very sharp. On the one hand, the Torah teaches me values. On the other hand, I can't take the next step and say, I know God, I know why you did that. They're two different things. To say Hashem gave me a mitzvah through which I learned values, that's true. To say there's a reason to the mitzvah that I can understand, that's true. To say that I'm so smart as to understand Hashem's reason for the mitzvah, and as such I can say, yeah, I know the reason behind the mitzvah, that not. You guys see the fine differences, a very fine line there, Todaoba. There's a very fine line which has to be realized. Again, the mitzvah teaches me values. Yes. Is there a reason to the mitzvah I can understand? Yes. But do I know the reason behind the mitzvah of why Hashem commanded it? Can I say, Hashem, yeah, that matches. I can tell you why Hashem did that. That's very dangerous. That's saying there's a logic or a moral system that predates God. That's the idea of saying there's a value system that's before the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then Hashem has to match that value system. And that's not true. That's what the Mishnah is coming to say. You can't say Hashem gave the mitzvah of Kantzipor because of mercy. But wait a second, isn't it supposed to teach me mercy? Yeah, I can understand that reason, and that's what it'll teach me. But I cannot say that there are concepts that precede the Ribbono Shel Olam and they dictate Hashem's behavior, Hashem's commandments. Hashem created the concept of mercy. Hashem created the concept of feeling. I'll prove it to you. You're all drinking tea. No one has mercy on the tea. But you're devouring that tea, the poor tea. You'll tell me it doesn't feel anything. Ah, so there's a concept of feeling. And that's why we say I can't do something that something else feels. The concept of feeling is also a creation. You see, the tea, we say, we think, doesn't have feeling. You see, the blades of grass you cut, you think, don't have feelings. And then the worm, you say, don't kill that butterfly. Right? I could just do that. Ah, it'll get your homish dirty. No. There's value. There's life. Maybe it feels. Probably it feels. Just a second. So, again, the concept we're working towards is there a reason? Yes. Do I know the reason? No. Is there a reason I can understand? Yes. Do the mitzvahs have meaning to me? Yes. So we're dividing the idea here. Hashem's reason for mitzvot, we probably can never figure it out. The mitzvot have reasons that we can wrap our heads around? Yes. We should never make the mistake of thinking what Shlomo HaMelech thought, I know why Hashem gave this mitzvah. Shlomo HaMelech thought that, and that's why he allowed himself to do the mitzvahs in other ways, right? I can marry more women, I won't go the wrong route. I can have a lot of money, I won't end up sending people down to Egypt. I won't end up being arrogant, right?
He was right, wasn't he?
Those are the only three mitzvot where the Torah gave us the reason. And you see, it still messed him up.
He was right
because the Torah revealed it. The Medrash says, Hashem says, I'll reveal to you the reason for three mitzvot, and you'll see how much it hurts the smartest of men. And then you'll understand why I can't tell you why I gave mitzvot.
But you feel basically because it didn't hurt, right? You feel.
Shlomo failed. In that sense, Shlomo failed. But Chazal say those are the three exceptions in Torah, where Hashem says, I'll tell you a reason why I gave the mitzvot. Now we come to the specific mitzvah of Lulav and Etrog, which we can discuss in a minute. But all this was introductory. We have to know there's a reason and that our mitzvot accomplish. I was in the hospital yesterday with a friend of mine who is suffering greatly. And he basically said to me, I don't want to suffer anymore. He said to me, you know, they're telling me I have to undergo all kinds of treatment and then I might live and suffer some more. I don't want to suffer anymore. So what do you tell a person like that? So the doctor and his relative, they both walk out of the room and say, "We're so happy you came. Talk to him. Thanks." Right? So what are you supposed to say? So I'll tell you one part of the conversation. I said to him, you know, there's a Gemara about Rebbe. I said, look, after commiserating, I'm just taking one part of the conversation. It didn't start with this, it didn't end with this. But one part of the conversation. I said to him, you know, there's a Gemara about Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi. And the Gemara says that Rebbe once had a calf run to him. It didn't want to get slaughtered. And Rebbe told the calf, "What are you running away for? This is what you were created for." And then he gave the calf over to the butcher and it was slaughtered. And in heaven they were upset at Rebbe. He should have had more mercy over this calf. And so Rebbe started having pains. And Rebbe was in tremendous pain, it says in the Medrash, for 2 years. So for 2 years Rebbe's suffering, and the Gemara gives us a reason why. Then the Gemara says, for 2 years no woman in Israel miscarried. No one miscarried for those 2 years. I said, that's, you know, how do you understand that Gemara? On the one end, the Gemara tells you he deserved it and tells you why. Then the Gemara says, but during those 2 years, he was able to absorb the suffering of all the Jewish people, and no woman miscarried for those 2 years. What? How do you rectify the two? So I told him, you see from Chazal that there is a reason why a person suffers. And on the other hand, when a person accepts it the way Hashem wants him to accept it, then he can affect all of Klal Yisrael. He can help everyone because he's willing to accept it. He doesn't stand and yell at their bon shom. On the contrary, he says, okay, if this is what you want, their bon shom, I'm willing to deal with it. I'm going to accept it. So his acceptance of his suffering and the way that he was supposed to was able to help everyone else. So yes, there was a reason. And yes, there was also a benefit that everyone else had. And we see the same concept with Shimshon, the Mishnah in Sota. The Mishnah explains why he was supposed to have his eyes gouged out. And then it says what he accomplished, how much he was able to destroy the Philistines and the merit of having his eyes gouged out. If he deserved it, why the merits? Same concept. So it's very important for all of us, when we do mitzvah, to understand that there's a reason, that we're accomplishing something. When we understand that I'm accomplishing something, that I'm helping the world with every mitzvah I'm doing, then I can be excited over doing it. If I'm just going to have to live with the idea, there's meaning, don't worry about it. That's very hard to connect to. Every one of us needs to feel I'm accomplishing with these mitzvot. You tell a small child, you know, you're building blocks in the Beit HaMikdash. So children sometimes imagine it. I remember one of our kids learned that in Gan. They would do something and then they'd come and say, "Did I add another brick to the Beit HaMikdash?" Of course. Now they felt they accomplished something. They saw something in that. So some people like to think about their world to come. Other people like to think about how every mitzvah moves the world forward. And we definitely affect the whole world with what we do. There's no question about that. We don't always get to see it, but we do. We affect the people around us. We affect broader scales, like a rock, a pebble that falls into a pond, and it makes ripple effects. You don't see all of them. So now that's why it is important to take time and understand what's going on with the mitzvahs. Even though I can't figure out everything Hashem was thinking, but we said the mitzvot are there to teach me values, and there are aspects of the reason that I can understand and I should understand. Because the more we understand, the more we can connect to mitzvot. So it is important. So that's why I do want to discuss what was worded in the question, how they word it. Why does Hashem still want me shaking all those leaves? Something along those lines. So we're going to discuss that in a minute after we've had all those introductions. Ken? Namalo. Okay, yes. Introduce yourself.
Binyamin Avadia from San Diego.
Yes.